You're listening to an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
With Mother's Day just around the corner here in the UK, we're going to speak today with Olga Itsenko-Mahler. She is a blogger, a mom, a massage therapist, and a business owner. And she happens to live in Brisbane, Australia, with her husband and two boys. Now, Olga joins us now to talk a little bit about, the joys and challenges of motherhood. It is so lovely speaking with you today.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. It's nice to speak with you all the way over from Brisbane. So, Olga, let's start with, the most important thing. How old are your boys these days?
I have a big gap between my boys. Oldest boy is 18 and my second baby is only 8.
So quite a big gap there, as you said. But so I know you are actually currently doing the really important job of being a full-time mom. So was that a decision that you came to recently? Because I know you had your business for a while as well.
Yes, it is a very recent decision, and not only full-time mom, but also a homeschooling mom, which is the next level. And the reason we are homeschooling this year is because our family had been through quite a lot of things in the last year, a lot of them not that pleasant. And we decided to tick some things off our bucket list and to go on a road trip to the United States and Canada for almost a year. And of course, you know, to continue education, we decided to do homeschooling. So far I've done we finished the first term of school. And yeah, it's been a journey.
How did you find that transition to going from, because I imagine there'll be some similarities in running your own business and also running, your own single pupil school?
Very different, but in a way similar in terms of planning and being just prepared for unexpected situations. Absolutely. And sometimes what you think is going to be the best works out to be not so great. It's definitely a similarity. In terms of difference, I felt a little bit more free and like I was contributing more to my family when I was working in my massage and spa business, whereas now I'm not contributing financially. I don't know, even though motherhood is the most important, the most difficult job there is, yet our society puts a bit of pressure on us that it's not enough. You have to also work and contribute financially. So I definitely have those thoughts, you know, in the background.
It must be really hard to, combine those two, because yes, in one way we live in this modern world where women are expected to have it all, but then when you have it all, when you're, 100% giving it all to being a mother and 100% giving it to your business and then 100% trying to give it to your relationship and then your friends and then your own health, you end up burning out. There's not enough time in a day to really commit all of your time to so many different things.
Unfortunately, it's absolutely correct. In my experience, I had to give up gym, not because I've lost interest to exercising. I just don't really have emotional space in me left for it. I feel that in the morning, I would rather have my cup of coffee, sit down and plan the day so it goes smoothly rather than, unexpected stressful situations when it comes to the actual activities. And that would be the only time when I could actually go to the gym. So I did have to give up that, but I did replace it with 15 minutes yoga. So I guess I try to stay fit and compromise. But yeah, I'd say you do have to make sacrifices, that's for sure.
Mm. And you yourself, I know you are blind. So would you mind telling us just a little bit about your eye condition?
I was born in Ukraine to blind parents, and my condition is hereditary. it has to do with optic nerve hyperplasia, which basically means my optic nerve didn't develop, and also retinal degeneration, which pretty much means the same thing. So yeah, in the stage of fetal development, those vision organs didn't develop. I can pretty much only see light and darkness. That's all I can see.
So what, as not just a mother currently, but as a teacher, what would you say are your best kind of accessible technology or adaptations that you use to really make that homeschooled environment really, really work for both you and your son?
Oh, so one of the biggest tools that I've been using has been ChatGPT AI. I create a lot of printouts for math, for English. They're not always perfect, but you can have another go and another go until you get it to the point where it's where you want it to be. You can also, I guess, use different platforms. So we are loving Matific as an example. It's a digital video game-based math from kindy to year up to year six. A lot of it then I just have to be basically there to supervise that he's actually doing it. What I find is almost irreplaceable when it comes to eyesight when you are teaching young kids. My son is only 8, so he's in grade 3. When it comes to handwriting or supervising how he sets out an equation in math, or whether he writes messy or neatly, those kind of things, there are no tools really for it. In Australia, we're pretty lucky. Maybe in UK, it's the same. We have actually a program from the government called NDIS where you get certain level of financial support that you can use to hire someone. So we actually get support worker coming and helping us with those aspects that I completely can't do by myself. But really, most of the things is possible to do using computers, using online platforms, AI, reading, for instance. At this stage, when the child is quite competent reader, blindness is not a problem. You can hear that the child is not reading correctly, and you can stop and go back and ask him to spell. Of course, for a sighted parent, it would be quicker perhaps, because they see exactly where the mistake is and they can point at it and say, try to spell it, or like try to sound it out. Whereas for me, I have to ask the child to spell it, and then with figure out together what that is. And also with English not being my first language, sometimes I have to learn together with him. We have to use a dictionary or, you know, just other resources. I definitely love my technology for help as a teacher and as a blind mom.
Now, that's obviously modern technology, but I know you're also, I think you love using Braille, and that's whether you use it for games or books. How would you say Braille factors in your life currently and also your teaching schedule?
I used to rely on Braille a lot more when my child was younger and he couldn't read out, for instance, cards from like a table game, let's say Monopoly. Whereas now, he does a lot of work when we're playing together, like moving characters along the board or reading out the action cards. So by now that he is fluent in reading, he's just happy to do things for him and myself as long as I'm around and fully engaged, not like scrolling on my phone while he is moving characters on the board. So, you know, the main thing with Braille, I guess, is in the past. Now I can be a little bit more relaxed in that sense. But we still play, for instance, Braille Uno cards or Braille Monopoly. So yeah, on the second thought, Braille does have a place in our house.
Well, you have this massive trip coming up. How are you planning? Obviously, you're going to be traveling and seeing a lot, and that in itself is such a amazing opportunity for your son to learn and, you know, learn about new cultures and history and just explore. But how will you, continue the other part of like his education during that time?
A suitcase of books. I'm actually in the process of packing today, and it's a nightmare trying to decide what to keep, what to exclude, because we have quite a few exercise books and reading books. So I'm bringing all of that, and we are also doing sort of the main source of our curriculum is an online platform that you use at your own pace, but they are providing all the lessons kind of Monday to Friday every week based on Australian curriculum. And because it's all online, it's not a problem. So just taking computer. But I do hope that we will try to learn, like you said, through just experiences. For instance, my son is really into medical stuff and anatomy, and he really hopes to be able to do like a play surgery at the science museum somewhere. And so like that's my homework to research and to be able to provide those opportunities, taking him to those interactive museums on human body and stuff. So yeah, definitely the trip will be evolving around his interests a lot, but that's what parenting is.
It's kind of amazing because I guess in this case, you can make his study a lot more personalized than it would be if he was in a class with other kids.
Absolutely. When we started the curriculum for year three, we quickly realized that math is way too boring, and we requested to go next year up in mathematics. Now that we're doing that, we realize that even that is not really strong enough for us. Like, he can do grade six math. So this is how far we can go at homeschooling at the subject that he has talent and interest for. But with English, we have a lot more struggle. Perhaps we're moving maybe even a bit slower than they would be moving at school. So definitely amazing opportunity to personalize it for your child. But whether I would do it long term, the answer is very strongly no. It's not for my family, not for my child. So Michael, my son, has ADHD and ASD, autism spectrum disorder. Like, he doesn't have really sensitivity to like noise and light that some autistic children experience at schools. What he does have is feeling anxiety about workload, initiating tasks. And because of that, school is quite overwhelming for him, but he still performs better in the mainstream school than at home because he has no choice. He has to go ahead and do the task, whereas at home, more time is spent on actually convincing him and sometimes threatening that you will lose all of your technology or trying to bribe him. So a lot of time simply gets wasted on convincing him to do things, not because he's such a lazy child. It's because he has a genuine diagnosis. It's a real thing. It's a real thing for autistic children resisting cognitive work.
You mentioned some challenges of everything you're doing right now, but I would like to maybe end on a really positive note. So what would you say is the most rewarding thing about being a mom of two boys?
I don't know, just affection, getting affectionate with them. Because boys are boys, they're not like girls. They're often kind of on their own page in terms of they want to mind their own space, especially once they get older. But then there are times even my 18-year-old would come home. He just finished school and started doing work. He's taking a gap year. And he would come home and he really needs to talk to you and unload how difficult his day was and say, "Mom, I need a hug." And it just feels so good to be needed, to be their anchor. And then a lot of laughter, really, especially with the little ones still. Things he says or does, they just make you smile. It's so nice to be able to say to him, "You make me so happy." And it's so true. It's definitely a journey of happiness being a parent.
Well, Olga, on that really positive note, thank you so much for speaking with us on RNAB Connect Radio today.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
For more interviews, features, and shows, go to your favorite podcast provider and search for RNIB Connect Radio.